Hi, everybody, and good morning. Well, whatever time it is for you, this feels for me like a rude awakening, you know, a couple hours of sleep and in we go. But the Advent time is one which leads with increasing momentum towards the encounter with the secret of the soul as we find in Capricorn. So in your chat box, I did send you a little link, which will be for the actual moment of the solstice. My wife Tuya will be doing a service meditation for the solstice, and you'll find the broadcast link there. So if you want to take advantage of that, if you don't have something else planned for that time, then you are definitely most welcome. It's always difficult to know how to start dealing with something that doesn't end and never began, as far as that goes. I guess, you know, the first thing I'll just do is just very briefly say hi, you know, to Anne and Anne and Annette and Catherine and Sherry, Eva, Frederick, Helen, Jan, Joan, Jan Alexis, Kathy, Laura, Leah, Laura Lee, Martha, Michael, Myrna, Rebecca, Risto, Sam, Tom, and Yvonne, and of course here we have on staff Brett and Joe and myself. So I say hi to you in the world of relativity, which is the world in which apparently distinct things, or processes or entities relate, relativity relate to each other. In order to have relativity, you have to have division. And of course, that is a construct of our consciousness. One thinks about, you know, speculatively, the kind of consciousness possessed by the higher beings and finally by the one great being of cosmos that we've been calling the Universal Logos, and we speculate that although vision, a division, division, kind of interesting about vision and division, interesting. Two, die is two, and vision is what you see or reflect. That even though all divisions can be noted, probably none of them is seen as real. Probably of all relative beings, and the Universal Logos is still to be considered a relative being, that particular being has the greatest sense of the undisturbed and undisturbable essential unity, actually essential identicality, essential oneness. So as we, you know, time after time, under the law of periodicity, as we pass through endless universes, we will come closer and closer to that realization. And as a human being right now, rather low on the emanative extension, we have to begin to get some kind of idea about what the unity really is and to try to live in it. So I just thought, you know, just for fun, we'll just pause for a moment perhaps, and every one of us now has a certain method. I suppose you've been evolving a certain method of attuning with the kinds of things we've been talking about, or the kinds of non-things. So why don't each one of us use our particular method, and for the moment, just go into the perception of what you consider reality to be, or the oneness, or the unity, or the substratum, whatever name you want to call it. We'll just use whatever mantra or method or alignment that works for you when it works. Doesn't always work, you know, of course. Can't count on that. But use that, and let's just see if we can all come to focus in what we consider reality to be. I'll just leave us in the silence for a few moments. Kind of wonder whether we can sustain our daily consciousness, which must deal with multiplicity necessarily, whether we can sustain that effectively and still not only be aware of the substratum, but actually have the sense of being the substratum. So this is going to require, a good Virgoan virtue practice until we can achieve that fourth, it's on the fourth subplane of the atmic plane. It's a city that's called perfection. Kind of wonder what that might be, but I think it's a kind of completeness of realization in which all opposites are reconciled, and we're constantly dealing with the opposites, and maybe we're so busy in our normal life in these pressureful times when humanity is so much in crisis that we don't, it seems strange, but don't have time to think about reality or to attune with it, but I suggest that it is a very worthy and necessary endeavor, and will be necessary for all of us in an acute manner when the time comes. Whether the time is here for us right now or not is difficult to say, but I think it cannot hurt, and a seed is planted for all of us so that the day will come when our consciousness is not only triadal, but it is monadic as well, meaning that it is the awareness of the pure being which one always is. Now, one of the things that we've been doing, I've been telling you, I've been sort of writing this book, And I'm calling it Seeds of the Infinite. And I don't know how long it'll take me in terms of relative time. And of course, I want to get it to you, if I can manage. But meanwhile, I'm extracting some seed thoughts from this effort, which, and every one of these seed thoughts is like a key for certain types of minds or certain types of perceptions to open the door to a deeper level of reality than we may be customarily experiencing. Now, as I've said, it's probably up to you to devise your own way in. Everyone builds the Antikarana on their own, and it's a unique process, and it's composed of much that is drawn from your unique reincarnational experience. But maybe some of these thoughts will be a little bit helpful, or at least take the mind out of its usual concrete preoccupations. You know, we repeat certain words so many times, they become solid and intractable. They become difficult to penetrate, and they always sort of mean the same thing for us. Maybe we can loosen that up a bit and create a more flexible mode of perception and a more flexible mind to interpret these things. So I've got quite a few seed thoughts here. I'm not going to, obviously, in our meditation, go through all of them. You know, that's just too much. But hopefully we can get this to you. I'll send this to Brett and Joe, and hopefully they can get these documents to you, so that if you care to study a little bit and practice with these seed thoughts, you'll be able to do so. Of course, now, you know, many of you are members of the Moria Federation, and it doesn't excuse you from your normal meditations. This is just a little bit of dessert, a little bit of the cherry on the cake, perhaps. And I also want to say that the intake for the Moria Federation is coming on very, very soon. You know, we're just a couple of days away from it. So if you have this impulse that you might like to study the Ageless Wisdom in depth, please do go to our website, Moria Federation, all one word, moriafederation.com. Maybe Brett or Joe can put our email address there into the chat box, moriafederation.com, and go to the area where it talks about applications. And perhaps there's one aspect of our work, whether it's Meditation Quest or Great Quest or Quest Universal, it's really 8 years in all, that appeals to you and that you think you are suited for, and complete that application. We'll begin working together in this, great task of assimilating the Ageless Wisdom. But right now we're dealing with the little different kind of curriculum that we'll be pursuing in the Moria Federation. We're dealing with the curriculum of being, and it's an entirely different perception, you know. So I simply offer this to you on a weekly basis. Maybe next week, for some of you, our normal time here would be Christmas Day, and I'm not going to do that, you know. That's such an important day and so busy in everybody's lives, so probably next week we will not have this particular meeting on my Saturday morning and your Friday night or your, you know, Saturday afternoon or evening. If I change my mind, I'll let you know, but I think I should let you have your Christmas Day uninterrupted. Okay, now, let's look at some of these seed thoughts. And I haven't elaborated them too much, just to say a little bit about them, and let's look at them in a meditative mode. Meaning that, you know, I'm not sure how powerful our analytical mind has to be applied to these things right now. What does have to be applied is a sort of an understanding and an openness to whatever the seed thought might give to you. So it's kind of a meditative reflection as we contemplate these things, and then we'll have a little chance to share a bit and then go into our short meditation. I keep on adapting this process according to inspiration. So anyway, gosh, I just thought of a new one. You know, maybe you've heard of the word presentation, or presentation of consciousness, or to consciousness. So any presentation is you. Now, that must be obvious in a way, but if you, all there is in terms of our consciousness is what we call contents of consciousness, and then maybe some kind of awareness of the field of consciousness itself. But if there is any kind of presentation, you know, like for instance, I'm sitting here in our temple, and I see kind of a Christmas tree with lights, or I see, here, here's something. This is a magnetic reality inducer. Anyway, this has quite a vibration, lots of copper in it, it's a Venusian. It's a presentation to my consciousness. I'm holding it, I'm seeing it, I'm feeling it. But it's the same as the Christmas tree, or the chair that I see, or the water glass that I have. I don't differentiate, at least not in this state of mind. So any presentation, the mere fact that something is presented makes it the one reality. If we can get deeply enough within the presentation. I call these things contents of consciousness, because, you know, apparently differentiable or differentiated contents are all around us on whatever plane. I have a feeling, I have a thought, I have an energy sense, something's moving through me. It's all a presentation to consciousness, and any presentation, so actually, you know, what I would say further here is that all presentations are equal. I'm dealing a lot with equality today. Maybe, you know, each one of us, throw in a little bit of occultism here, each one of us has a sun sign, and when we get to the point that we're interested in being, in what pure being is, then the sign opposite your sun sign may give you a hint about how to approach monadic awareness. Because it's said to be, D.K. Wrote some interesting things, and they can be found in various places. It's about the triangle that exists between your sun sign, your rising sign, and the point opposite your rising, your sun sign. So the sun sign is a revelatory of the personality. The rising sign is revelatory of the soul in a particular incarnation. And if we can get that far, the point opposite the sun sign is revelatory of the monad in a particular incarnation. Obviously, there are 12 modes of revelation because your sun sign continues to change. So maybe there's a particular way in. You know, for me, as an Aries type, on the sun sign, my point opposite is Libra. Okay. Libra, the sign of equalization. So I for me, a particular type of entry into reality has to do with this Libran mode of perception, which is that of equality. The equation, this equals that, you know. And I come to the final equation that all things equal each other. And reciprocally, all contents of consciousness are equal. So basically, what I have here is just this simple little word form, any two. I practice it all the time. AT, at, you know, if you want to remember it, any two. It makes no difference which two. Any two are equal in essence and identical in essence. Any two at all. Now, You may say, well, what do you mean? That's so preposterous. Look at this thing, and look at that other thing, and they look so different. Well, already you're into the realm of quality. You have to stop at being before you get to quality, or maybe work your way through quality and into being. But isness comes first. Isness first. IF first. Isness. I try to sense the isness of anything before I get into examining and comparing any two things. So when I look at any two things, I'm not looking for their differences, not at first. I'm looking for their equalization in isness. I am, I am looking for their, and I'll just say it this way, equalization as isness, E-A-I. That's the first thing that hits me. Now, so often I jump over that, and I get right into what the thing is, and I lose the isness of it, which is the subtlest layer. The mere fact that it is a presentation in consciousness means that it's equal to every other, equal and identical to every other presentation of consciousness. I realize this is a very ancient philosophy. It's based on the Upanishads, which is the philosophical, they are the philosophical presentation of the Vedas. But for me, this ancient presentation makes sense as long as we do not forget that we have a mind and that we have to handle relativity with it. So the equalization as isness. Just look around you, for instance. And try to, I don't know by what means, it'll have to be unique to you, but try to see the isness of the thing first. Before you get into what it is, you're into the fact that it is at all. So I often say it's not what you are, it's that you are. That's the main thing. It's not what you are. Of course, it is what you are. To study in the world of relativity, it has to be what you are. But when dealing with the kind of approach I'm making here, it's not so much what you are, it's that you are at all. It's not a question of what it is. It's the fact it's that it is at all. You have to stop at that level, at that layer. So just look around you, in the world of the senses. And see if the isness of things can jump out at you before you are, what I would say, qualitatively trapped in a consideration of all the particulars. Because it's on that level, this level I'm talking about now, that all things are equal. And, when this happens for me, I feel the vibration in my heart, or in the chain of hearts of which I've spoken, heart in the head, egoic lotus, monad, 12-fold monad. But I'm not approaching two things with my mind first. I'm approaching the beingness of any presentation, the beingness. remember what DK said, you know, harmlessness, the life expression of the man who realizes himself to be everywhere, and for whom all forms are alike in that they veil and hide the light and are but externalizations of the one infinite being. Now, you know, philosophically I might call this ontological equalization. Equalization is being itself. Whenever you're studying the nature of being, it's called ontology. Ontology. And the adjective ontological. Ontological equalization, if we want some kind of fancy word for it. But more important than the word is the experience itself. And, you know, maybe it shouldn't even be called experience, should be called imperience. But surely every one of us has a little bit of relative time every day to take a moment to equalize the environment. Equalize anything perceived. Equalize it. Homogenize it. And so the really ironic thing is that on the way to this particular approach to non-duality, a kind of a duality of perception is needed. And they have to be sustained while the universe exists. Because, you know, you really, I mean, of course you can drop the equalization, most people do, most people never get to it, and just deal with things as they seem to be. But once you begin to enter the equalization, you can't drop relativity. You have to deal with relativity because this is our dance, our play, our drama, our creation. This is us, or we, in creative form. That's what the whole universe really is. You can't drop that. Because that's our purpose at the very beginning, to offer to ourselves that creation in Mahamaya, which we call the universe. So anyway, I call this ontological equalization, and our capacity should grow to equalize any two in being. Now you can compare one plane to another, you know, it doesn't just have to be things. I can look at a thing, and then an image in my mind, an imagination, imagining, it's still the same. I can look at anything, and a thought, or a sentence, or a word. The isness of the two things is identical. Not, obviously, the presentation to consciousness with all of its variety. Those things are distinct, but the isness. So get the isness first. And don't be satisfied unless you are hit, so to speak. Language is very limiting, of course. But don't be satisfied unless you're hit with the isness of things. Because you can be sure that if you perceive it, it's got isness. Any presentation is. And there's just multiplicity of presentations which we cannot yet receive because of our particular human structure, but they're all there, izzing along. They are. Until, you know, finally the absolutely infinite possibilities are all presented to the absolute deity, which is simply the absolute infinitude of itself, when it begins to move from pure beingness towards the self-becoming we call the universe. Now, look, don't ask me to repeat that because I couldn't if I tried. But but anyway, you know, you'll have these. You just go to the Makara website, and maybe Brett can put the the link in there in the chat box for you. And, you know, all of these discussions are there. So, you know, in my own life, too, obviously I am progressing, even as I hope we are all progressing. Progressing in sensitivity to perception. And for me, over the last several days, maybe it's the Advent period, maybe it's Christmas coming, you know, the whole idea or reality of isness is just getting more vivid. And that's how it goes. You know, if you, many wise men, or was it Muktananda or one of those, he says, well, you can dig many little wells and not get to water, or you can dig one very, very deep well and you can get to water. So sometimes I feel that as I contemplate the raw fact of isness, that's my deep well, and I think I'm getting closer and closer to the sufficient intensity of realization. So it'll probably be that way for you too, you know, along a certain line. But I suggest that, you know, as the days pass, just take a moment out to abstract from preoccupation with quality and just bask in the isness of any presentation at all. Well, you know, once I started comparing two things at a time, any two which are equal in essence but not equal in form, I said, well, okay, why don't I compare three or four or five or six and on and on. Well, obviously, before long, you're going to be looking at everything, the entire collection. I call that N, you know. N in mathematics represents any non-negative integer. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, etc. We're not getting into negative numbers at this point. Yeah, and there's a big question as to whether you can ever have parts of things. Because as you perceive, you know, one and a half things, the perception itself makes that one and a half into a unity. You unitize it by perceiving it, even if it's a thing and a half or a thing and three quarters. So you kind of wonder, really, whether in reality there are anything but integers, because a perceived fraction of a thing becomes a thing in itself. Perception unitizes. That's one of my little seed thoughts. Perception unitizes. So, starting from any two, which is the easy place to start, and seeing the identical isness of the two, even though their form is widely discrepant, you move on to other numbers until you reach N. Well, you never reach N. It's going to be infinite, but you try to unite any N, whether it's 14 or 28 or 42 or 105 or whatever it happens to be. Unite any N as being, in being. I'm sitting here in this little temple we have, and I'm sure my eyes are taking in well over 100 different unique items. Well, that's my N at the moment. And I work at perceiving the beingness of this N. And deeper than that, I work at being the beingness or the isness of this particular N, knowing I could just extend that almost forever until all the perceivable items on our planet are included. See, after a while, I'm sure we're not going to have to do two at a time, three at a time. There's just going to be this overwhelming sense that everything within our field of consciousness, the entire N of it, is the same thing, just is. So the idea is isness first, if first isness. So we can equalize any group, and eventually it's the mantra, equalize all diversity. We realize that diversity from this perspective is simply apparent. We have a certain perceptual structure in our mechanism here. We're a little bit ahead of the grasshopper with its compound eye, you know, has all of those polygonic surfaces which are all related to each other, but they split the image. And we have the rounded eye, and we don't have to split the image. But of course, the feeling in the heart when you're perceiving a multiple image has to be, you know, worked on, and you'll recognize growing degrees of intensity of that realization as you go. Sometimes it just locks right in, and sometimes, you know, given where we are thus far, sometimes it doesn't work the way it works at other times. But remember, isness first. Or maybe after you've studied the quality of something exhaustively and gotten to all the intricacy of this and that and turned it every which way and related every which way, you can stand back and get back simply into the isness of it and the isness of all things that are being related in your mind to it. So the sort of non-dimension of isness is the profound perception which we must cultivate. Sometimes I like to think about all of this as a kind of consuming fire. You know, I like the idea of, of consuming differentiation. It's as if a great fire of realization burns, and that fragmentation is a dross, an impurity which can be consumed by this fire of unitive perception. So sometimes the word consume activates my unitive perception. Whatever works for you. But I sometimes say to myself, being consumes all. And nothing differentiable remains. Well, ultimately differentiable. You know, in Rule 9 we say, hiding all difference, blotting out all form. That doesn't mean that if a car is coming at you, you're not going to jump out of the way, you know. Old Hindu idea, you know, the elephant came towards someone and injured them, and the person said, well, but God injured me, you know. I thought this was God, you know. I thought it's all God, but you have to pay attention to the aspects of God that appear in the Mahamaya. So you have to be practical even while being unitive. What's the old Zen idea? You know, in the beginning, the mountain. Then, no more mountain. What happened? Then again, the mountain. And that's that synthetic stage where relativity and non-relativity or identicality can be contained simultaneously in consciousness. Master Moria is always talking about containment. And I say, you know, can we contain the opposites? That is the question, excuse me. Sorry. That is the question, and we have to work on that. So being consumes all. And as I say, I tend to use the heart as an organ of perception. Of course, the real heart is the soul, and the real heart is the monad. But still, along the line of hearts, which actually DK does give at some point, he takes it all the way from a heart center, all the way up to the planetary logos and the solar logos, all the way. Well, not all the way, but a long way. And I say to myself, my heart consumes all diversity. So maybe the fire of the heart consumes all diversity. Or my heart of being consumes all diversity. This is the fire of heart destroying the illusion of differentiation. I'm kind of passionate about destroying that particular illusion, hiding all difference, blotting out all form. Master DK gives it to us, you know. Or hiding the light of the soul, blotting out the light of form. That's not quite as far. That is Rule 5 of the 14 Advanced Rules. But by the time you get to Rule 9, not just the light, it's hiding all difference, blotting out all form. At least, you know, in meditation for 5 or 10 relative minutes a day, one can attempt that and see what will be the effect on the consciousness. So however you want to go at it, you know, it has to be practiced, this practicing of ontological equalization, all things being equal in being, all things being utterly unique in form. The principle of Master Moria talks about the principle of non-repeatability. So in terms of actual form, throughout eternity, there's a principle of non-repeatability operating. Every universe is utterly different and from every other, and every particle is differentiable from every other particle, even though we classify them in a certain category. But the beingness is equal. So can we contain this endless variety of absolute infinitude and absolutely homogeneous, identical beingness forever? You know, on page 285 of Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 2, the six trumpeted words. I've called our attention to that before. Begins with God is, and it ends with God is. And in between is the whole creative and destructive process. So go there, you know, and we have, you know, in the Moria Federation, when we're dealing with illusion and maybe in a little bit some of the more advanced work in the Quest Universal section, we get into those six trumpeted words. Magnificent. I have a friend who's tells me he's going to be setting them to music. And, you know, one day maybe the sounds on which these words, in whatever language, were sounded, will be restored to us. Very effective at the time. So, you know, I equalize everything when I can, and we've been talking about how all things are true points. Every perceivable is a true point, ultimately a true point, and you just equalize all true points and superimpose them until they become the non-dimensionality they always have been. So I am always. I'm the equalization of all true points. I am the always the equalization of any two, of any n, of all. I am the equalization, because after all, I mean, you are the very essence which reveals in you the equalization of any apparent two or any n and of all. I am always the equalization of the two, of any n, and of all. That equalization is I myself. So always isness first, first isness, and then hold as you proceed in your Mahamayavic necessary life, hold the Mahamaya and all variety and all quality, even as one is and perceives that one has become all this, and it's nothing but oneself in the essential meaning of that term. Okay, friends, well, those are the seed thoughts I wanted to discuss this morning a little bit. And, you know, you could wonder, you could, you know, like I say, theme and variations. You know, in a way, there's nothing to say. The great sage Shankaracharya, who was considered, you know, the equal of the Buddha, and they were both like the two hemispheres of the brain, so to speak. That's the way to which they are referred. I've always been very inspired by Shankaracharya, and he says, well, okay, tat tvam asi, thou art that, and 10,000 books will be written on thou art that. But the essence of it all is thou art that. And the greater essence is not having to say anything at all, but just knowing it. Being it. And then getting on with the great expression of the Mahamaya, which is the creation we have become. Because we are indeed the self-becoming one. So, you know, I'll come up with all these seed thoughts, but they're nothing but thou art that. That's it. But the different angles of thought which might penetrate through the obstruction into the central mystery, these angles are important. And so, whereas one seed thought might leave you completely cold and in a state of non-revelation, another might be really an open sesame and open the door. So when we meet next, I'll continue with some different angles here and we'll practice together, because, you know, it's not just having the thought in your mind that this can be done, it's the doing of it. That's what's important, the practice of it. And even if you practice the same thing for 20 years and finally the door opens, it's been worth it. Or if you practice different things and suddenly the door opens because one of those things somehow combined with everything you have been forever, or at least let's just say all of your human history, to curtail it, then that's worth it too. By the way, while I'm thinking of what's worth it, remember that the next full moon is on Christmas Day. Wow, what a combination of things. The Capricorn full moon on Christmas Day for most people. Just look it up. But that'll be a great, you know, there's such a spirit at Christmas, there's such a beauty, such an elevation of consciousness for so many. You know, sometimes it's a time of depression for people. But for many, it's, you're just swept by this wonderful Christ energy. And to think that we get our full moon in Capricorn on the Christmas Day when so much of human consciousness is in the process of being elevated. I'm speaking in very relative terms, of course. But it's a great feeling, and I would say a great opportunity. Okay, so friends, if any of you have any thoughts that you might like to share, a number of other people have joined us since I called out your names and said welcome, and Sherry, you're here, and Kathy Miller, I don't know if I called your name before, and Laura Lee, you're here. Can't help but be here, of course. Michael, Patricia. Some may have come, some may have gone, but you can't help but be here, right? You know, there's no there. It's kind of interesting. One of the important things, you know, is to negate the sense of there. It's all here. It's all present. It's all at one point. So no matter how far out in the universe you appear to go, it's all here. Now, you can say that, but, you know, I have to work with the idea that Venus is here. The Sun is here. The Andromeda Galaxy is here. And beyond and beyond and beyond, there's no there. The whole idea of there seems to imply extension in space. And we've worked very hard to negate the idea of extension, whether in time or space, collapsing everything to the dimensionless point. So we've got to get rid of there while we're thinking in this manner. But it's the feeling of no there-ness which is important. In the Yoga Sutras, they talk about things like this. And those books, some of the advanced books, are studied by the masters themselves. So there, you know, we've got to get rid of no there-ness, no then-ness. Then can work as an indicator of the past, then can work as an indicator of the future. No there-ness, no then-ness. But that takes practice. And, you know, the dragon's eye will open for a short time and then close, and open for a little longer and then close, and the dragon's eye will eventually perceive no there-ness, no then-ness. Okay, so if anybody would like to ask a question or offer a thought, comment, whether you write it down in the question area or whether you speak it out, you're most welcome to do that if you'd like to at this point. We'll have our little closing kind of meditation after this little discussion session, if it does exist, if we do. You see, the utter simplicity of what we're talking about, the apparent complexity and yet the utter simplicity, you say, well, you know, what in the world can I possibly ask or say, you know, because it's just the utmost simplicity. But anyway, the floor is open to you if you wish to write something or say something, or you're most welcome. You know, you would just raise your hand if you wanted to speak, or just put it in a question box. I believe there's a little question box and a hand box there, and you're most welcome if you wish. Okay. Well, then I trust that I've been absolutely clear, and everybody understands everything I've said. Now, the real trick is to understand what you yourself say. You know, it's certainly possible for the mouth to be in motion without apprehension functioning. So, if I understood or understand everything I say, I think I'll be very happy about that. I remember an old story of the meeting of Uspensky and Gurdjieff. You know, Gurdjieff was a famous teacher, and Uspensky, a famous Russian writer on these various topics. And I guess Gurdjieff said to him a certain humbling thing. Uspensky had just given a brilliant lecture, and basically Gurdjieff said to him, if I felt you understood what you were talking about, I might become interested. Well, you know, of course, you know, Gurdjieff was the initiate. He could see through, and he knew whether the person was just a talker or whether comprehension was behind the talk, whether it was just theoretical or whether there was true comprehension. So always I say to myself, well, I know I'm a talker, no problem there, but do I understand what I say? And hopefully that is increasing. Okay, Michael, I see the question mark there. Brett, can you tell me what Michael is saying?
Yes, we have a couple things. Michael says, many ways to express the essential idea of oneness of being. I especially like the thought, A-T-A-E-I-B, I think it's that.
Yeah, there it is. All things are equal in being. A-T-A-E-I-B, all things are equal in being. Yeah, like I say, Michael, these are my ways, you know. I try to make sense of life. I just try to make sense of it, and I come up with certain verbal expressions which help me make sense of it. But it's got to be, every person has to take this trip on his own. Every emanation has to find his own way back to the source from which it came. So, you know, and that's the fun of it, too. Getting into the way you would express these things to yourself, so that it really lifts the veil. Now, you know, I've got notebooks full of stuff, but some of what I write lifts the veil, and some of what I write is just writing. So, you know, light connects with some of what is written, but maybe others of what is written, not especially so. So you'll find your own open sesame, you know. And if the open sesame of another person seems reasonably harmonious or revelatory, then okay, then you can use that too. Right, so that's what Michael wrote, right, Brett?
Yeah.
Are there any other things?
Yes. Catherine is noting that Soti 19 is on the 19th. Soti 19 on the 19th. I'm not quite sure what she's written here. I'm sorry, Catherine.
But I understand it entirely, because this is the day.
All related to the numerical number N, the letter N.
Yeah. Well, this is the 19th, you know, for people in Australia, which Catherine is. Hi. And this is our 19th webinar. And 19 is a very important number. Of course, it's the S. It's the 19th letter of our English alphabet. And, you know, I know I can look a little bit bizarre when I get into some of these things, okay? But I've gone around, you know, hissing like a serpent in the you can try it yourself, you know. You know, it's a very interesting letter, because it sort of invokes the serpent power, and for me it's a trigger for the idea of same. You know, in other words, instead of saying the words same, I just use the S. And it does something a little quasi-magically to remind me of the great energy that we call Kundalini, but, you know, it's much greater energy, the great energy which is pouring through all things and is all things. So the 19 is very important. It comes out as a 1, right? 1 and 9 is 10. Yeah. It's a 1, right? Okay. So that 10 is a 1 is the unity we're looking for. So the interesting thing is 19 is very important to me, and I use this, you know, of course, they'll lock you up if you go around doing this, but okay. I use this to induce this sense of oneness. And I suppose that once the Kundalini fully rises, that sense of oneness is always always with us in ever deepening and intensifying degrees. Now also, you know, while I'm elaborating a little bit on 19, in the tarot, it's the sun card. Well, 18 is the moon card. It's illusion, right? You know, so the 18 lower subplanes and all that give us our customary illusions. There are many, many more beyond the 18, but okay. 19 gives us the sun. And the sun is the great unifier. You know, we can call that the solarization of consciousness. And at the third initiation, we all get solarized in our sort of the first real step of solarization. And the sun breaks forth on top of the mountain. And from that time on, the basis of isolated unity is achievable. So this number 19 is really important and has association with many things which are revelatory of the subject that we are studying. Nice, I'm glad you're here, Catherine. I remember the good old Australian days of many, many classes, and I hope all is going well with you, relative you. Things can't help but go well with real you. Okay, thank you. Are there any others, Brett?
Catherine just adds, in Australia we put 19 first, so it is 19-12-15 date.
Okay. Well, that's a day to remember. That's a day to remember. Right. Thank you. Okay, any other folks, do you want to say anything, ask anything? You know, like I say, this is mostly for your own inner contemplation. Sometimes I just get so busy, you know, running here, running there, doing this. I say, why don't I just sit down for a minute and just, you know, get back to reality? You know, there's this old mystic statement, and you well know it. Be still and know that I am God. It's kind of interesting because I still am God. I'm always God. So there's the stillness and the persistence that is implied by the word still. Remain, persist, be still, keep on being, and know that I am God. Especially important if you have a lot of third ray of activity in your nature. Anything else?
Jen says, thank you for these seed thoughts. There are some sources now who have said on the 19th, we are directly aligned with the galactic center. Using the seed thought of having no there, it is quite astounding to think of this connection.
Right. You know, I've forgotten about the galactic center and that alignment, which is in, for the time being for us, in later Sagittarius, which we are now. In later Sagittarius, opposite, getting near Betelgeuse, the great star in Orion. So, right, the galactic center is here, as are all galactic centers. It's a great thought. Appreciate being put in touch with that central fire of our one about whom naught may be said. You know, when you read D.K.'s Occultism, he comes up with this idea of the one about whom naught may be said, but it's not just one being he's talking about. It's an ever-expanding group of beings about whom we can really say nothing. And I think the galaxy, our galaxy, is a very important member of that series of ones about whom naught may be said. You see, if I am successful and I write the word O-A-W and I press this, I will see that nothing happens. Oh, that's too bad. But if I press English and I do that, then maybe there it is. And I don't always have to be writing one about whom naught may be said. I can just write O-A-W, and there it is. I wish appreciating the nature of that being were as easy. Okay. Is there anything further you would like to say or to comment on before we get into our little meditation? I don't plan to spend a long period of relative time in the meditation. It's just giving us a chance together to be still, be in the presence of certain seed thoughts, allow them to have an effect on our relative consciousness, and see if we can penetrate more deeply into the reality we always are. So, if not, then we'll just do a little meditating together. And certainly by now we should be well into the flow. We are many things, of course, and still only one thing, and still one no thing. But we can think of ourselves as a point of being consciousness, and of course intelligence too, but for practical purposes, being, a point of being, a dimensionless point of being which is endowed with consciousness. We are the observer, the true point, and all the instrumentation that we have, whether it's the etheric physical body or our emotional vehicle, sentient vehicle, or our thought form creating mind, we can get beyond all of those instrumentations . They too are resolvable into the essence, but they have a particular form at this time. And we enter together a still higher form, which is our unfolding egoic lotus on the higher mental plane. Each one of us has such a lotus, which is a truer vehicle, more important vehicle, really, than any of the personality vehicles, though without the personality vehicles, we could not unfold the egoic lotus. And we imagine that we enter the central fire of the egoic lotus. and that instead of conceiving ourselves as beings with personalities, which we are, but we are rather, we are beings inhabiting this middle vehicle, this egoic lotus. And we feel very close to each other when we are in the central fire of our lotus. The unity of all of us, wherever we may be in space, is revealed. And we feel a certain harmonious relationship in a unified field that in which we are all participating. And we would move into a more planetary space. The thinking power of the planetary logos and his unitive love and his will, these are all somewhat available to us in those forming vehicles called the spiritual triad. They form at different times. They develop fully at different times, but we can begin to participate somewhat in a more planetary type of consciousness, because we're entering a non-local field. Our egoic lotus is local, but once we enter the triad, the usual assignments of location and time and space do not apply. So together we become somewhat capable at least of a reflected triadal perception, thinking widely within the mind of God, however dim that reflection might be of God's thought, loving within the unifying love of God, our planetary logos, and willing to some small extent what our planetary logos wills. And then imaginatively slipping into the monad itself, whatever it may look like instrumentally, it is the central fire of being at the heart of the monad. So we imagine we are in this particular central fire, the higher jewel, the jewel in the crown of the planetary logos. And it's here that we can really begin to hide all difference in being and blot out all form in being. And it's here that we begin to realize that we really are one thing, one essence, one homogeneity. Even in our soul nature, we have differentiation, but in the central fire of being, we are, if we can grasp it, identical. And from this state of at least being influenced by monadic awareness, you know, we're not calling ourselves a 6-degree initiate monad, but at least being able to be influenced in our normal consciousness, we can ponder maybe one or two of these seed thoughts and see if some new light or some new realization can come to us. So we made much of this seed thought isness first, or first isness. Very simple. So let us, in our own way, in the silence, contemplate isness first. You can go two at a time, three at a time, whatever grouping. But whatever you behold on whatever plane or mixture of planes, isness first. And from this perspective, the tiniest ultimate particle event, Yupi, becomes the equal of the entire universe, the equal in being, isness first. The isness of any one thing is no different from the isness of any other thing. So it comes to me that isness is the great equalizer. And this, of course, is even more true of the capitalization Can you imagine spending one day, just one day, with isness first? Now, wouldn't that be a strong attack on the great heresy of separateness? And within that idea, we can maybe take one more thought, which is a sub-thought. All things are equal in being. All things are equal in being. Or maybe as being. Dealing with super qualitative perception, or supra qualitative perception. All things are equal in being. We are detaching being from quality. isness first, all things are equal in being. And if we can have the experience or imperience towards which these seed thoughts tend, then our consciousness will indeed be liberated into states which we can barely conceive in our normal understanding. So isness first will take us on the path to isolated unity, and we will indeed blot out all form and hide all difference when we realize that all things are equal in being. And these realizations will induce in us skill in action in the qualitative world in which we must inevitably, cyclically, and forever live. Cyclically, forever, the ever-recurrent Mahamaya, which is our self-becoming. And so, assuming that the seed thoughts have the utility of making our life in relativity of a higher qualitative nature, even while transcending quality, we will sound the great invocation together, invoking the light, love, and power which are needed to fulfill our purpose at the beginning, which is working out as the divine plan, and especially locally on our planet. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, purpose guide the little wills of men. The purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Friends, the solstice is coming. The full moon is coming. The doors to the Mori Federation are wide open. So I hope you can find the relative time to participate with us in the forthcoming webinars and broadcasts as we enter this very, very holy time of the year. And I wish you all a beautiful solstice and a beautiful Christmas. And I think we'll probably have a New Year broadcast also. So just stay tuned and we'll get the word out to you. And if you've joined this particular series, your name will be put on the constant contact list with the Moria Federation so you can be aware of the different offerings that we have and choose whether you would like to participate in them. If our communication is good, then you'll know about these things and perhaps take advantage. So thank you so much for being here this morning, afternoon, evening, whatever it is for you. And I'll start from the top, Brett. And just want to wish you a very happy life. Happy, joyful, blissful, all those good things. And I'm hearing a good ohm there. And let's see, Brett, if you can knock out from below, then I won't have to go through the whole thing. Or Joe, if Brett is not there. He is. Someone's there. Very good. Okay, friends. Farewell. Although that's impossible. It's impossible to be separated from oneself. And we'll see you at the solstice, some of you, maybe all of you. And we'll see you at the Christmas, and just have a beautiful Christmas. Sing a lot, you know. And take care, and lots of love. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Bye-bye.
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 Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Sam. Bye-bye.
Blessings.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
I get to recognize your voices. All the better. I hear bells.